Stephen.
Scott.
Normally, I would do the intro piece and stuff like this, but I just feel I need to preface this episode. Right?
Okay.
This is going to be a good episode. This
I hope so.
I'm really looking forward
every
to
every episode.
Every episode's good, right? But I'm really looking forward to discussing this because I feel this was like a bit of a cultural phenomenon moment. This kind of thing. So we will dive deeper into that in a minute. But I just wanted to lead with that. All right. Hello everyone, and welcome to Watch the Film Podcast. My name is Scott,
and I'm Steve,
and we are here to talk about Dune Part 2 spoiler review. We'll start with no spoilers. To be honest. Little bit of a discussion about it without spoilers, but then we'll have to talk about some bits of it and things like that anyway. But before we dive into Dune 2, where can people listen Al Ghaib to all our other stuff, Stephen?
On all major podcast providers.
Hell yeah.
I love that. I love that you got that in.
I'm talking in Fremen now. they can. And they can find us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter by searching for Watch the Film Pod.
Listen Al Ghaib.
Listen Al Ghaib.
That's referencing something else.
Yeah, if you've not seen it, and please don't turn off. So yeah, Dune Part 2. We are going to dive into this. Like I said, spoiler free for a little bit. And then we'll talk a few plot things and stuff like that. The reason I led with that little monologue at the beginning there, Stephen, is because I've seen people quote things like this on Twitter and stuff like this, which I'll get to in a minute. But I genuinely thought this coming out of this film, right? I think what we are part of as a culture, if that's what you want to call it, a film viewing culture in this little pocket of time that we exist in, we've just seen something like people will have felt coming out of Star Wars for the first time.
I totally agree with you.
And we've just seen what people will have felt. You might be able to talk about this because you will have lived through this as well. Coming out with like Lord of the Rings for the first time. I think this film, and it is that, it's a film. It's not a movie. It's a piece of cinema, this, right? In a science fiction world set 26,000 years in the future from our time, you know, which is ridiculous when you spell it out. This was one of those things that you could argue as a two-piece with the first film or the first part of this film and what may come
after this.
You know, you might get a trilogy of films, if you like, that people will put on that shelf as they are like pieces of history in cinema. And I think that this is one of those. So that was why I led with that.
Yeah.
Because I think we're going to review it and we'll have a bit of a laugh and we'll talk about a few bits that we liked and this, that, and the other. But as like critically speaking, this was up there with one of the greatest cinema experiences I've had. Endgame was amazing as an experience. I'm not saying, you know, same kind of film kind of thing. Experience was amazing. I loved when we went to see the three Lord of the Rings films in one day.
Last year, that was great.
But watching this and just the emotions and the feeling and the awe, the word awesome gets thrown around a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
This was awesome.
Yeah.
This was awe-inspiring is what I felt. For a plethora of reasons, which we'll discuss, but that was why I led with that. So.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I totally agree with everything what you said there. And that's it. I totally agree with you. It was a cultural phenomenon. That kind of thing when people throw them sort of things about. But yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. It really was. I'm so gutted. I never saw the first one at cinema.
Mm.
I'm really glad I saw it last week.
Yeah.
I'd only seen the first one a week before, and then we went to see this, and it was only really. I'll be honest with you. It was one of these that. Just talk about Dune the first part. I'll just sort of give you a little bit of backstory.
We haven't spoke about that.
No.
Anyway, have we on this? Cause...
So obviously, there's It's based on the book. Is it Frank Herbert? It's Frank Herbert, isn't it? Yeah, Frank Herbert. It's based on the series of novels by Frank Herbert. But there was a film in the 1980s. I believe I've seen that. I'm sure I've seen it. In fact, I know I've seen that.
I think you have, because when I said about this, you didn't like saying see this at cinema.
Because
I remember when I said to you, it was like, oh, the one in the 80s was rubbish.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it was. For me, it was, and it's one of these films that's always been... it's up there on people's lists and all this sort of thing, but it's like a bit of a cult classic, that sort of thing. And for me, it never really did it for me.
Just let me jump in there. You might be more aware of that than I am.
Yeah.
I'd not even heard of it before. Yeah,
I knew of
the
it.
The first
Dune. Yeah.
You know, the new, the 2019 one.
Yeah.
So to me, I had not heard of it.
Well, this is the thing. When, even, yeah, 2021. So when you went to see it, and I think I was decorating at the time. That's probably why I never went. I'm sure there was a reason. I think I was on nights as well. Maybe. There was a couple of reasons why I never ended up going to see it at cinema. But anyway, long story short, it came out, and I remember you saying how great it was, and I was like, oh yeah, but the one in the 80s was terrible, and I just didn't fancy it. And I thought, Denis Villeneuve, no, it's not really my cup of tea. Well, I'll be honest with you, how stupid I was for not going to see it. It was absolutely, the first one I was like, oh, I just wanted it to carry on. I didn't want it to end. And I was like, this is awesome. I mean, obviously, I've got a big TV, so it helped that watching on a big TV. So I'm so glad. I couldn't wait till weekend to go, like we saw it last Friday, didn't we? Could not wait until Friday to go and see this. And I'll be honest with you, there's times where I was actually nodding off, and that was nothing to do with the film. That was because I was so tired.
Yeah,
I've had a very long week.
Yeah.
I've been up like early hours of the
morning.
That's
no reflection on the film. Like,
I couldn't sleep. I've been up early hours of the morning. I had very little sleep. I had about 4 hours sleep that night, and I'd not slept properly. Long day at work, I was really tired, and I said to Ben, I said, had this been any other film, I probably wouldn't have gone, but I need to see this film, and it did not let me down. It was so good, and it was exactly what you said. It was like a moment in time. I think back to some of the films, like what you said to me there, I think back like throughout my lifetime, I never saw the Star Wars films at the cinema.
No.
I saw them because I was too young. I can only think it would be something like that where people have walked out with that.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like Lord of the Rings. The first Lord of the Rings, I went with my granddad to see that.
Yeah.
And it was so good. It was just like one of those movies that just like, oh, wow. Mm. Just awe-inspiring and just so good. I think of things like Schindler's List. It reminded me, it wasn't nothing like Schindler's List, but I remember that feeling that you watched that and you was like, the weight of it, and you watched that and the way you came out of that. That, again, that's something I've never gone back to.
Yeah,
I ain't
seen
that in over 30 years. But that was, I remember watching that cinema like, wow, just like jaw hit the floor. Lord of the Rings, late 90s, early 2000s. And then, like you say, Endgame. And maybe even another one for me, maybe Force Awakens, because of all that.
Yeah.
All that was
that the build
long
up
wait
for it.
And the build-up for it. And that never let you down. And so good. Mm. I mean, what followed it probably wasn't. But that was so good. Mm. So for this, it was up there.
Yeah,
it was up there with such a good film. As sequels go, was it better than the first one? The first one was so good.
Let me jump in on that. Because
I think it either was... It just didn't disappoint. It either carried on from the first one, or it was even better. I can't remember.
I'm gonna see this again tomorrow. I think you're gonna try and see it again, aren't you?
I'm definitely gonna get to see it again.
I'll gladly come and see it again with you. I reckon I'll end up seeing this maybe 4 times at cinema at least, because I'm gonna try and go to the IMAX.
We'll
try and find an opportunity to go and see that, which is about an hour from where we are, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I'm gonna watch this week. Gonna try and watch the first one again.
Yeah,
because I listened to a few people talk about it, and you know, going on what I remember of the first one, things like this, it said that this second one elevates the first one, but the first one also complements this one.
Yeah,
and they are ultimately 1 6-hour story, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you know, part one and part two is the Dune book.
Yeah.
Now that story is now told, and then as you said, there's 5 other main stories that come after that.
Yeah.
But it'll be really interesting to go back to the first one to kind of, because you know now what's going to happen and what that planted the, like laid the platform for.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to watching the first one again.
Yeah.
You know, and I agree, you know, as a sequel, it'll be really difficult to say which one was better. I probably would say Dune Part 2 was the better one, even though the first one's excellent as well. But just moving on slightly, I know we said about spoilers and stuff, I don't think we can do this justice in a 20-minute podcast to dive massively into the story. So there will be spoilers, because we'll talk about, oh, how cool was that bit, or, oh, I didn't see that bit coming, or I wonder what'll happen off the back of that bit.
Yeah.
But I don't think you're wanting to do this either. We're not going to talk the...
I just want to tell you just what I thought of the film.
Yeah, really. And likewise, because it's a very complex story, isn't it? You know, it's a very heavy story. But
it would be nice to do a full podcast just on this, like
the pair of them maybe.
Do you remember our other podcast that we used to do?
Yeah, vaguely.
Two films with a column thread, and we set them like any two good brothers would do. And go back to the trailer.
Yeah, oh, please let's not do that.
But no, like that's episode where we take two.
Yeah, and look and at compare them. Side,
could you imagine trying to pick these two and try and pick them apart and put which on the list is? We go back to that original list that we had, that film ultimate watch list that we put together.
What I think gives
which one of these would you pick?
What
you
I think gives part two the slight advantages though, because I feel in a way, Dune Part One is as a, and you this baffled you didn't it at the time when it was released. It was just Dune.
Yeah.
So
yeah, yeah.
So they obviously knew he was going to make the rest of the story because of where the first one ends, but it wasn't announced. So it was like it was probably just wait and see how it does.
Yeah.
But
it probably was actually,
Because it could have gone the other way, couldn't it? And it is
could
like
have been a big flop, couldn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's obviously a visual masterpiece and things like that. But story wise, it's heavy.
Yeah,
and it might not have met the mass appeal. I mean, I would imagine this is on track, Dune Part Two, to make more money than the first one. I think the first one made a
probably
bit.
When it came out as well, straight after COVID as well. So,
but where the second one has the advantages, if you look at them both as one massive story, the first part is the first act, isn't it?
Yeah.
Setting the story, what's to come. This is what's going to happen.
Well, it sets all your players up, doesn't
it? Yeah, and then it just ends. Yeah. And like you said, you're wanting what happens next. Part two literally picks up where the first one ended. And it has Act Two and Act Three. So it has all the payoff in this one. So
the other thing as well is the first one set over the space of maybe a few months.
Yeah.
Whereas this, the start of it is because you see where, I can't remember his name. We looked at all the names there. I can't remember his name.
Timothy Chalamet?
Not Timothy Chalamet. The
Oscar Isaac.
Oscar Isaac. Yep. His character, where he is told that he's got to essentially got to by the people that come to him and tell him that he's essentially just got to go to this planet. You're in charge of the spice farms now. You're looking after that. You know the Emperor's dictated it. You've got to do it. So his family's got to go there. They've got to leave their beautiful planet and go there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've got all that. That's over a space of time. Mm. But then the fall of House Atreides, if you like, is maybe probably the final half of the film is over the space of maybe about a day or two.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas this is spaced over such a long period
of time.
You see
a lot of Paul developing as a person,
right,
and a lot of moving around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And in becoming I won't even say a cult leader, maybe even like a messiah, if you like, like a spiritual leader.
He becomes
leader.
A man, doesn't he?
Yeah.
You know, because you look at how he is in the first one. He's very much a boy, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and he grows a lot throughout the course of the two films.
But yeah, there's again, I'm not going to reference anything because I don't want to put any spoilers on there. But yeah, for me, stellar cast, absolute stellar cast. That always helps. But everyone rose to the A game, didn't they? Yeah. Brought their A game to it. It was Timothy Chalamet, obviously, Paul Atreides. I thought was fantastic in this. Mm. I've never seen the big fuss with him as an actor. I'm like, I can never really see it. And this film, I think I said to you afterwards, I see that now. I can see what people are talking about now. He was absolutely sensational in this film. So I'm going to tell you who stole the film for me. Every scene he was in, he just stole it. I thought he was fantastic in it. Ulstilgar himself, Javier Bardem. He was just absolutely brilliant. I thought he stole the film. I thought he was fantastic.
It was superb.
Who did it for you? You're going to say it, aren't you?
No, I'm not. No.
Oh, go on then.
What I'm gonna say is,
Do you think anyone stole the film?
I think that question depends what angle you're looking at it from, because
I think character development for me from the first one to the second film.
Yeah.
I mean, they all have character development, every single one of them. But for him, Stilgar, how he came onto the screen the first one, spat on the table, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
How you saw him there to how he was in the end. Every scene he was in, it was just brilliant. I thought it was fantastic.
To answer your question, I think I would probably agree with you.
Yeah.
In terms of like who to me in every scene he was in, like Sean.
Yeah.
But then even then, like none of them were rubbish, were they? But I did think Austin Butler was really good.
Yeah, right? the only reason I said that was because I think there's everyone's like giving him his flowers at the Austin Butler, like he stole the film. I don't think he did for me. I thought it was good, don't get me wrong, very menacing. I saw online today that Barry Keoghan and Harry Styles were also in the picture to play character. You certainly would have got a different performance out of both of them. Harry Styles definitely not the pick, but no one could have played it as good as what he did. So to me, he was the right person for it, and he played it so well.
You don't watch a lot of the Jimmy Fallon type things, do you? Stuff like
not
that.
Not really. I don't know if
it was Jimmy Fallon. Yeah. It might have been one of the other ones, but one of like the Late Late Show something. They were talking to Austin Butler, and he said he didn't audition for that role. It was when he was on Elvis.
Yeah.
In fact, it might have even been before, while he was like prepping for Elvis, and he had a meeting with Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah.
And they spoke about the role, blah blah blah, and he said, I will have to dream about you in the role.
Yeah.
And 3 days later, he rang him and said, I want you to play that role. And it was something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, Denis Villeneuve sounds like an absolute, like, very unique individual, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Like, when you listen to him and things like that. As most of these, like, visionary directors are, aren't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, that was quite cool. But I just thought they were all good. I mean, I don't know if we spoke about it on here, but like privately and stuff, like Zendaya's not just take a reliever kind of thing in other things.
Yeah.
I thought she was amazing good in this.
Yeah.
And like, as you said, Timothy Chalamet was really good.
Yeah. Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin played that role well. I mean, Batista, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
I felt even he had a little bit of depth to him because he was a coward in this, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Really
good.
One person I think, like, if you want to say, if it won Javier Bardem to steal the show, Rebecca Ferguson.
I thought he was going to say Stellan Skarsgård as Baron Hakkinen.
No.
Hakkinen, sorry, yeah.
I thought Rebecca Ferguson, because her character went on a journey.
Yeah.
Like, you know, whereas the Baron was the Baron.
Yeah,
you know, so it was more of the same, wasn't it? Whereas I felt Rebecca Ferguson's character, like what was she called in the end?
Emperor
Mother or something like that.
Reverend Mother, was it?
Reverend Mother, yeah.
Reverend Mother,
but,
But
she was very, very good. But like we said, they were all good and things.
Yeah.
I think, so talk about the... Oh, go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, I watched Matt Kermode the other day because he's a massive Dune fan anyway, because he likes the original one.
Mm.
And he was saying about it, because you couldn't get over Christopher Walken, you know, being the Emperor. That was the
I saw that myself. Yeah, I mean...
A couple things like that. Me personally...
I couldn't get over it. Like,
I don't think it took anything away from it.
Didn't spoil anything for me.
Don't
get me wrong, it was Christopher Walken being the Emperor, but...
Yeah. But for how long he was in the film anyway. But, you know, in terms of the casting for this film, absolutely fantastic. Mm. Absolutely brilliant. Visuals on the screen. I mean, the first film had the...
Can I just jump one more thing about cast?
Yeah, sorry.
You say, like, for the amount of screen time he had.
Yeah.
I felt the same about Florence Pugh.
Yeah, yeah. Not in the film for much, yeah.
But everything she was in, she... like really stood out.
Yeah.
And I also, again, I heard this on another review, but I fully agree with it. How good was, like, and you mentioned, we'll probably mention this a minute when we talk about visuals and things, but how good was, like, the costume department, as particularly for Florence Pugh?
Yeah.
Because every, like, outfit she had on, it was like this noble, regal thing, wasn't it? Like, something out of Game of Thrones, or something out of the old Kings and Queens days kind of thing. But, do you not feel that this is like borderline turned into like what a Nolan film's like, where everyone just wanted to be in it? Like,
That's what I was actually going to touch on that.
There's like loads of big names in that set. I mean, granted, not like the Nolan one where they pop up.
I saw Josh Brolin give an interview on something recently, and he was saying about, you know, really good friends with Denis Villeneuve, and when he asks you to do something, you just do it. Same as what Nolan.
Yeah,
you see, like you said, these visionary directors, how the just sort of. People just flock to them because they want to work with them. A bit like Spielberg. I mean, Spielberg just, you know, you only have to put his name on it, associated to a film, and people just want to work with him, don't they? Really good cast, really good visuals. The special effects are just out this world. The ships, what they flew, that were like bugs in the first one, like, you know, they're more like a dragonfly.
Yeah.
it was so good in the first film that it was just in the second film, in this second part, you sort of just overlooked it, didn't you? It wasn't even like.
Can I just add there?
Do you know what I mean?
Let me help you explain it. Right?
Yeah, go on. You know what I'm trying to say.
And I think this will put it across nicely.
Yeah.
So like you've just said, let's look at it from the other way, right? Yeah. When you criticize a film for not having good effects, it's when you're talking about take the end of the first Black Panther, for example, when they're fighting in that train scene.
Yeah.
And it's quite clearly CG, right? That to me is what you define as sometimes as like, the special effects are a bit ropey. Or you could see the way in that car, things like that. You've just said special effects and then started to reference, like you say, the ship designs and basically the world that has been built across these two films. That's how good the special effects are, because you're referencing it like it's real.
Yeah.
A reality that's been created, which is then a different conversation as well, because the world that's created in this is just so special and so like well crafted and handled with care. You compare it to like Lord of the Rings, how everything in that is handled with like attention.
Yeah.
And I felt the same with this. And like you said, that these ships, which are just so unique, and the way they're designed and the way they move and what they do, it's just you accept, they're just there. And you know, you look at like the shots on the sand dunes and things, when you see that the making of that is them actually in the desert filming these things. Yeah. It's not like and don't get me wrong, I'm not...
It's not a green screen. Yeah,
yeah. And I mean, there's a place for that. And, you know, and there's lots of, you know, many examples where good CGI is implemented.
Yeah.
But they had the audacity to go and film this in the desert. Yeah. You know, like that.
I always think CGI... I'm not a massive fan of CGI films. I always think... If you're going to add it in, which is a bit of... I say that, and I love Polar Express. But what I'm saying to you is, CG needs to enhance the story.
Yeah.
That's what this film did. It didn't use it to try and take over. Look at this visual... Look at the visual effects on this film. Look at it. And it didn't take away from the story. It was there to enhance it.
The Worms. Prime example, right? Because if you said to somebody, like, oh, he's riding on this worm that's like... thousands of meters long, thousands of feet or hundreds of feet high, whatever, immediately your head would go to like something out of, I can't think of an example, but like out of a Ghostbusters film or something, where you're seeing this really over the top CGI thing. The actual, like, the way it's done is so subtle.
Yeah.
You barely see the worms, really, if you think about it. Those shots where he's riding them are so wide.
Yeah.
And even at the end when they're riding in, with the flags on top of them and stuff like that, it's real close up.
Yeah.
So you're only seeing like the texture of what they're on. And when they come out the ground, you only see the mouth or the opening. And it's just, to me, that's clever design. And yeah, it's obviously CGI. It's obviously effects.
But it's done so well.
It's subtle and it's in the background and it enhances what's going on.
Yeah.
As opposed to it being the main thing that detracts you from it sometimes, doesn't it? That's what bad CG can do. Or over-the-top CG can do. Not necessarily bad. But like you look at the Fast and Furious film, for example. When they've got...
I'm just thinking there. You know, RIPD, that one with Ryan Reynolds where he's dad and he comes back. And like that's just my first example I can think of. Or like you say, even like the early... I'm trying to think of something that's gone recently.
Star Wars prequels. And when they've added bits into the older ones... It sticks out like a sore thumb because it wasn't designed to be like that, was it?
Yeah.
Like if you came back to this in 50 years and put a CGI enhanced worm across them sand dunes, it just wouldn't work, would it?
It goes back to like what we were saying before last year when we watched the Lord of the Rings films. There's little bits in there that are a bit ropey, but they're very few and far between because it's aged so well.
Yeah.
Because it was handled correctly in the first place, and that's what this has done.
Yeah.
Handled correctly. But no, what I was trying to say to you there was that the ship in the first one, you're thrown into this world, see this ship, and you're like in awe of it on the screen. And then by the second film, there's the ships in the background. Yeah.
You just accept it.
Yeah. And like you said there, like the worm, you could actually believe that that worm was real.
Mm.
That's how the special effects are handled so well. Mm. Is that it doesn't take your attention away from it, and it doesn't take your attention away from how good the story is.
And there was just so
which is always key for me. The story's got to be the main. Yeah.
There was
the
so much thing, like attention to detail as well, weren't they? Like,
yeah.
You know, like all the set pieces were really thought out. All the shots were really thought out. Like, there's a scene where Paul and Chani kiss.
Yes, yeah.
And it's filmed close up to start with, and then it's this wide shot, and it's the massive open sand dunes, and they're just like this tiny piece in the middle of that. That's by design. That's him, because he's very scale-orientated, isn't he, as a director? You know, like Arrival is, everything's so big, and on purpose. But, like, there was loads of examples of that. But, like, the duel at the end where it's, like, there's silhouette, aren't they, against that sunset kind of thing in the background. And
we'll try not to do spoilers. Like.
Well, no, I mentioned spoilers. But, you know, in terms of the way that's framed at the beginning, you know, that's again, it's all by design. It's all meant to look the way it looks. And I was really impressed with all that stuff.
Yeah, there's so much in this film. I will say one thing. I saw Josh Brolin on a TV show. I've seen a couple of interviews what he did, and he said about the bassolet that he was playing. Mm. It's like a type of guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
And they actually created it. Mm. I mean, and for the minute, blinking the minute you see him playing it in the film, like he actually had this musical instrument that's a mythical one that's in a book created for him. They made it and he learned how to play it. Mm. I mean, that just shows you the level and depth that they go to in this film.
Insane, yeah.
You know, absolutely.
There was loads
brilliant.
There was other bits as well, like bits that, again, there's making a film and then there's going out your way to put little bits in. So, like, one that sticks out to me was, again, at the end, and said spoilers and things, but it's not. You're deep enough into it now that you know there was going to be spoilers. well, you are. I said spoilers at the beginning.
Spoilers alert. Yeah.
When Paul sells, I'm not very good with the names, but the elder woman who had done the test on him in the first film.
Oh yeah, Charlotte Rampling's character. Yeah. Yeah.
When he uses the voice and says silence.
Yeah.
It flashes to Austin Butler's character, and he's almost impressed. Like, the face, he, like, recoils with, like, huh, like, a bit of, you know, like, oh, fair play to you kind of thing. I'm going to battle you.
Yeah,
But I'm impressed with that. And then Airline of Abomination, like, she can see what he's become.
Yeah.
You know, just things like that. And like, the bit at the end, and again, like you said about the first one, you wanted it just to carry on. When they say at the end, and he's there, like, if the other houses don't accept me, we'll attack.
Yeah.
And it carries on a bit, doesn't it? They have the duel, whatever. Oh, and he takes her hand and blah, blah, blah. And then you hear that line of, we've had word from the houses that they don't accept.
Yeah.
And then you see where Zendaya's character's gone off to, and then obviously you hit your credits.
Yeah.
So it's like...
And it's the holy war. The
holy war is upon us kind of thing or whatever. But yeah, and you're there like, oh, I want to see the holy war.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to see what's going to happen.
I also read that they've finished the script for it, for a third film.
Mm.
But then I also read that he wants to leave it some time to before he films it.
He's got some other stuff in the pipeline, he said, didn't he?
Yeah, because he wants Timothy Chalamet to age a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, because it's set further into the future.
So it'll be a lot of people. I mean, I've bought the first book.
Yeah.
Read, like, the first page, and it's like, this is going to be a heavy read, this one. But, but the...
Well, I hope you do better than I did with Game of Thrones, because I got.
Oh, I read a bit of Game of Thrones. I mean, I got
through the first chapter and I was like, "This is a heavy book."
Yeah. Well,
and I've already seen the TV show, so
I
know what happens.
Game of Thrones,
but it's different,
like,
isn't it?
Well, I'd say I felt the opposite. I thought it was page for page.
Oh, was it the same?
I could see what was happening in the first series, but to my understanding, the second book is Dune Messiah, which is a lot smaller.
Hmm.
And people are saying that will be the story that's told next, whether it's in one film
or another
two.
Yeah.
But that is probably where he'll take it and then step away. I think I mentioned to you, there's a prequel series. Not a prequel series, cause that's wrong. It's not a prequel series. It's a series set way before the before the first film. It won't be designed, from what I was reading, it's not designed to lead into the first film. It's just another story set in
that universe, yeah.
It won't surprise me if you get... I mean, we're talking 10, 15 years down the line here, aren't we, eventually, but there's source material there to go into if you want to, isn't there? But they might not. They might just do the next one and wrap it up as a... This is that one story I wanted to tell.
I'll be honest with you. Looking at the last thing that someone did this with, when they did The Hobbit. Mm. The Hobbit for me just spoiled it. It didn't spoil the franchise. For me, Lord of the Rings is the trilogy. Anything else that's surrounding it is just not as good. It's a lot, you know, the Hobbit films I think are rubbish. The first one's all right.
The but only thing I'd argue, not argue, because I'm not.
Well,
I'm
I was
going to
say the power of the ring that one the series that, what they did that yeah. I turned that off in the end because I thought that was boring.
The only thing I'd debate with about that is that to my understanding, there's a vast amount of stuff in the source material of these stories. This it seems to be like very very deep. Whereas what they did with Lord of the Rings with The Hobbit is they took a very small book, didn't they?
Yeah, just made it into three films. Yeah.
I don't even know where the inspiration comes from the Amazon show for Lord of the Rings. Was that me?
Yeah, but you've got the Silmarillion, which is like a series of stories right. that and source information that's like a prequel and a predecessor. It precedes the Lord of the Rings story. Mm-hmm. So you've got all that there, and then you've got there's so much
things you can tap into
that you can use in that. So there is a lot there that they could use, but I just think the Lord of the Rings films.
Oh yeah, they're the three.
Is there anything else that follows? So if this is done right, you do it with a third film, and just,
you would do Dune Messiah.
Yeah, you'd have to, wouldn't you?
You might stretch it to two.
Yeah,
depends how big of a because they are scale wise.
Yeah,
there's a lot to tell, I suppose, isn't there? So yeah, you'll probably see Doom Messiah Part 1, Doom Messiah Part 2, and then that's probably what you'll get. And
how good will that be if
the quality continues?
Either way, I can't wait
for whatever comes next.
I'll definitely look at it because, like I say, I'm really looking forward to going to see this film again. It was such a good film. It's arguably going to be at the top. Well, it's going to be up there with some of the top films of my.
I'll be honest. I'll probably tell you right now. I can't see what would beat this year.
I don't know what's coming out.
But what I mean by that is, I was, you know, this was on my most anticipated list, along with Deadpool, for example. I can't see anything having the effect on me like this has had.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, the full day afterwards, I didn't stop thinking about this. I was reading about it on Twitter. You know, listening to people talk about it, listening to the soundtrack. We haven't spoken really about the score.
Yeah.
The score was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah,
but
Hans Zimmer.
Yeah, Hans Zimmer once again. But this is currently 93% on Rotten Tomatoes with 350 reviews, 95% on the audience score of Rotten Tomatoes. It's currently on IMDb after 121,000 ratings. What score do you think it is out of 10 on IMDb?
Out of 10?
Yeah.
I don't know,
nine.
Yeah.
Now, we often discuss this, that
if
you're getting 7.7, 7.8, that's a great score.
Yeah.
9 out of 10 is like.
It's up there, isn't it?
Well, if you look at Shawshank, right, that's always like the one, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Shaw.
Go on then. We'll go to the old podcast and we'll do it how you normally do it. Go on then. But I'll fire it over to you. So what?
Go on.
Go on then. What's Shawshank?
Oh, Shawshank. I've got it in front of me.
that's why I asked
you. Well, after 2.9 million ratings.
Yeah, so now you ask me what I think it is.
Oh, what do
this
you
is
think?
What I normally
oh,
do with
see,
you.
Got it. Yeah. Sorry. Well, that's how long it has been since we've done once. What do you think it's got?
Out of 10?
Yeah.
I reckon it's got 8.5.
9.3.
9.3, yeah.
Off 3 million ratings.
Yeah, that's pretty
so
good.
So that's pretty good. So if you then think of, what's the best Godfather? I've not seen the Godfather film. So
Godfather 2, Part 2.
So Godfather Part 2, that's got a 9 out of 10 on IMDb.
Yeah.
So it's
up there with some good company.
It's good up there with some good films. And you can imagine that's going to maybe deviate 0.1, 0.2 either side of that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can't for the life of me see suddenly the next 500,000 ratings being 1 out of 10 for Dune Part 2.
No.
So that's only going to continue to go at that level, which is crazy. And that backs up, probably bringing it to a close here, why I led with that line at the beginning. Because I feel this will be one of those things that... Oh, it'd be interesting, Empire Strikes Back, to see what that's got. This will be one of those things.
Goes through them all, though.
Yeah, but it's like that. It'll be one of them things that 8.7. So 8.7 out of 10 off 1.5 million votes. So you can imagine that Dune Part 2 is probably going to level out at about that as well.
Yeah.
And it will. I think it will be. It will be one of those things that's like culturally was one of those things. Those moments.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
It was very
good.
I'm looking forward to watching it again. Looking forward to you watching it again. I'll come with you and watch it again.
We'll definitely go see it. Yeah.
The only one thing worth just pointing out as well, though, And obviously Ben's not here, so I don't really want to speak for Ben too much. But Ben watched the first one, didn't he?
Yeah.
He watched it in three parts, though. He told me
that.
Right? I felt Ben's probably behind the eight ball slightly with a film like this. Because to me, if someone asked me what it is, I would say it's Star Wars meets Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Which that's...
And he's not seen Game of
Thrones. That's quite loose, isn't it? Yeah. But we spoke about this, didn't we, coming out? Because I don't think... Because Ben said he was like, I probably won't go and see it again.
Yeah.
Because I think it is a really heavy and complex ideology before you get to any of the visuals and the design of it and stuff, right? But like we said, he hadn't seen Game of Thrones. He hasn't seen Breaking Bad. He hasn't really watched... And then he said, it was like, oh yeah, but I've watched Walking Dead. But the manipulation and the game playing and the pawns being moved about for ultimate goals are very different in Breaking Bad and Game of Thrones and programs like that, aren't they, versus your Walking Deads and your Lost and things like that.
That's right, yeah.
So I feel that's an interesting viewpoint, I think, that, you know, some of Ben's, what, 16, hasn't been exposed to a lot of those, like, those heavier drama type things. I felt this maybe want for him because of that. You know, he loved the visuals and really enjoyed the action, blah, blah, blah. But the story side of it, it's very much leaning towards the heavier side, isn't it? That's what I'm trying to say really, in that way. But to round it up, I mean,
I'll round this up for you. I'll give you a little story. On Friday night, I watched Dune Part 2. On Saturday night, our Saturday night family film was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows. I got up and went and washed the pots halfway through.
Just started to run your hands through sand.
I just went and washed the pots halfway through. I was like, oh, I can't believe I'm watching this. What I watched last night and now look what I'm watching. Nothing against anyone who likes Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but...
Bit of a far cry from Dune,
It certainly want this film, anyone, go out there and watch it. You've got to see this.
If people want to hear our opinions on other things, not Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because we haven't reviewed that, where can they find it?
On all major podcast providers.
They can.
We could do that in the future.
Maybe.
We probably won't.
You've kind of just done it for us.
Yeah, there you go.
You can find us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter by searching for Watch Film Pod. Go and see Dune Part 2. It's phenomenal. See it on the biggest screen you can as well, because I reckon it's absolutely awe-inspiring on IMAX. And once you've seen it on the biggest screen possible, as Stephen said, you can find us on all major podcast providers to listen Al-Ghaib to any of our other material. What do you think, Stephen?
I thought that was good. That's just what the Muad'Dib would say.
He would.
He would.
Look at us.
Look at us.
We could be in the
Fremming. Bit of Fremming on a Tuesday night.
But no, thank you for listening.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Take care.